Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our best interviews are often highlighted right on the main screen? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Now joining us, she's got a Prada patch on her left shoulder, Julia Coronado with BNP Paribas.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
God, my head's spinning, Julia. It's Friday. You have been dead on about this American economy. Your vector has been more caution. You've been right. John Cassessa told me that auto sales look better than good. How can we have better than good pockets of good news within this economy if we all feel so miserable?
Well, it all depends on how you look at it. Auto sales is an interesting example. Auto sales actually edged lower through Q2. So there, in terms of consumer spending growth and GDP, auto sales are a negative after two quarters of very, very strong increases. But the auto industry has recalibrated their production levels and their expectations so that now they're basically looking for flat sales for the rest of the year, which they think of as a tremendous victory because it is up pretty significantly from last year's pace. So, you know, it depends on how you look at it. Sure, the auto industry is happy with that. It's better than it was. But in terms of growth, they're expecting no growth in auto sales for the remainder of the year, which means consumer spending should remain pretty subdued.
And, of course, their break-even points are a lot lower than they used to be.
Exactly. They have really pulled everything way down in terms of scaling things back, letting employees go, and now they can, any edge higher is a victory to them.
I know Ken wants to jump in here, but just a basic idea, is the auto industry in terms of efficiency and productivity catching up with the rest of America? Or is there something to learn here by other manufacturing processes?
I think it is a story of catch-up. The auto industry was held back by the inability to, you know, by the inflexibility in the union contracts and the overburdening benefits costs for quite a long time. And the recession allowed them to gain more flexibility than they had had. They let a lot of employees go. They negotiated much lower wage costs. And now they're competitive. So the auto industry caught up to the competitiveness of where a lot of other industries already were.
So, Julia, when it looks at when it comes to second quarter growth, are you in the 1% camp?
Yeah, I'm at 1.2 on
1.2.
Yep, which is down from a already disappointing 1.9% in Q1. So this is not an economy really firing on all cylinders. We're kind of limping along.
What about Q3 and Q4 then?
Well, Q3, I have 1.8%, but I'd say I'm a little bit worried because the momentum in the data is not strong. It's actually to the weak side, particularly in things like manufacturing production and retail sales, which retail sales in particular have been quite worrisome. They're declining outright on a three-month basis. Both core, headline, pretty much all categories of retail sales are showing weakness. So it looks like the consumer is really taking a breather, much more so than they did last year when sentiment was much lower. Mm. So last year, consumers said they were depressed, but they kept spending. Now consumers say they feel a little bit better, but they're not spending.
Yeah, and Gary Schilling, for one, says three straight quarters of negative retail sales equals recession.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're starting to see those recession indicators flashing again. I'd caution that with a U.S. economy that's been effectively Japanized, which means we've really squeezed a lot of excesses out of our system. There's not a lot that needs to be cut, but it's really hard to achieve any kind of strength in growth.
Japanized. All I can think of is Whistler and his later period where everything was Japan. Excuse me, Julie. It's Friday. I'm in a strange mood.
That's okay.
I'm worn out by gloom.
Just roll with that.
I'm rolling with it as best I can. Look. Futures negative 9.80. Dow futures negative 74. Very quickly, Julia, within this caution of gloom, I keep hearing the phrase soft patch. I'm not hearing that from you, am I?
No. You know, it is an economy where we're going through a whole lot of corrections. You know, right now, one of the biggest areas of correction is the government sector, which is already weighing on growth. It's a long road ahead of us, Tom. I can't, you know, people generally like to be naturally optimistic. I'd say, you know, I think we've averted a lot of disasters, but we have a lot of work to be done.
Julia, how important is the stock market right now to an economist? It has been resilient. Do you care?
I think it does matter. It matters to corporate America and their sense of normalcy and their willingness to invest and engage in things like mergers and acquisitions. I think it matters to American people looking at their 401k plans. So the resilience is something that I attribute to the market looking at the weak data and expecting Fed support. I don't think it's based on the data or necessarily the earnings season.
It's not a Bernanke market.
It's definitely a Bernanke market. So I think every one of these data indicators that disappoints, the market says that much more likelihood that they'll actually have to come in and print more money. So, and we do expect them to do so. We expect them to do so in September. So I think that accounts for a lot of the resilience. And that's a good thing because it's, I don't think the wealth effect for consumers is as important to consumer spending as it was in the past. I think consumers are much more cautious generally, but it is, again, having a floor under that stock market, at least having the stability, is pretty important right now.
Forgive me for working a shameless plug into this question, but Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio tonight, 8 to 10, tomorrow morning, 8 to 10. And one of our stories, Julia, is we're coming up on the first anniversary of the downgrade of America's credit rating.
Right.
And who back then, August of last year, you know, T-bills were over 2.5%, 10-year treasuries were over 2.5%.
Right.
And now they're less than 1.5%.
Right.
Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk, right? I mean, this is like rewarding a child that throws a temper tantrum by giving them candy, right? So the lawmakers behaved about as badly as they could have, not reaching sensible compromise, using this as a political grandstand opportunity, and they were rewarded with lower funding costs.
Well,
that's unfortunate.
To Ken's good question, Brad DeLong would exactly say that.
Yeah.
Stop worrying.
And
who's
there was
right?
Grandstanding on both sides.
Let's go across the San Francisco Bay. Is Brad DeLong right?
Or stop is John worrying about deficits?
No, the yield market says we're not worried, right?
Well, the yield market is saying a lot of things. I mean, I think it's saying that they expect low growth and inflation for a long time, and that's not necessarily what we would like to be pulling from the reading from the market tea leaves. It's also saying that there's no other safe haven in the world that people are comfortable with. So in a world where Europe is deleveraging and emerging markets are slowing down, you focus on principal protection and you focus on holding treasuries. And it's not a flight to quality. I often hear investors draw the distinction. It's a flight to liquidity. I know I can get in and out if I have to. So it's not that I believe in the long-run story of the U.S. federal government. It's that this is a liquid asset, and for now, that's what I want to hold.
Well, you know, we've been seeing negative yields on some sovereign debt in Europe, Germany, Switzerland, Finland.
Yep.
We have a story this morning saying short-term gilts may be headed that way, British government securities. What about here?
Well, we're starting to see, you know, the short-term securities, like the two-year Treasury yield, have been surprisingly high and resilient. And part of that reflects Operation Twist, where the Fed is essentially flooding the market with these short-term securities. But I think we are starting to see that break. We're seeing two-year yields go lower.
Right.
And you're right. With European yields turning negative on a relative value basis, if you want to hold a short-term security, why wouldn't you hold a two-year Treasury at 20 basis points?
Well, then I've been watching the seven-year Swiss is one benchmark. It's come in 2.5 beeps from 0.20 to 0.175 as they all grind lower. I just sent out on Bloomberg Radio Plus, folks, at the App Store, out on iTunes. It's free. Euro Yen. You've got a terrific Asia platform, Dr. Coronado.
Mm-hmm.
There we are, stronger yen. Euro yen blows through 96. Dollar yen blows through 79. Exactly where does Japan say enough of this foolishness and pull a Swiss and intervene again?
Well, you know, it's tough because their interventions haven't been particularly successful.
And they've been expensive.
And they've been very expensive, so it's hard to say exactly where that threshold is now. But the poor yen, the last thing the Japanese economy needs is a strong currency, and yet.
So you don't have a working number of surprise intervention, unilateral intervention by Japan.
In you're saying, no, I don't have a number right now for you to say this is the threshold and this is how much
right.
they'll do.
What will the Swiss do if we say intervention's expensive for the Japanese? To peg the Swiss franc so that McDonald's number two value meal in Zurich stays under $20. I mean, the fact is, there it is. That's got to be outrageously expensive for the Swiss National Bank.
It does. I mean, we really are in a currency war, aren't we?
Yes.
Everybody wants a weak currency to address the weakness in their economies. And ultimately, I think currencies like the yen will have to weaken. Currencies like the dollar and the euro both have to weaken against a fundamentally stronger emerging market backdrop. Those are the longer-term trends. In the near term, of course, everybody's looking for safety, and they go to the Swiss, and they go to, ironically, the yen, ironically because nobody has a higher debt-to-GDP ratio than Japan, and yet it's a safe haven. And it's a problem. It's a problem for us. We have benefited from the weaker dollar over the last couple of years. We're going to feel the effects of the stronger dollar through reduced competitiveness, reduced tourism.
Yeah. Julia, have a good weekend. Get Japanese. Julia Coronado with BNP Paribas. She's turning Japanese. I really think so.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.